on 2FM. With Green Farm, B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM.
The 28th of April, and this is Game On. We are back in Punchdown today, so we'll be discussing all of the day's action, plus Paddy Maher on What Now for Tipperary Hurling, Paul Corry on Jurgen Klopp's new contract. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, welcome along. I'm delighted to say that Paul is with me here in studio, as is Don McLean. And Don, we might as well start with the big news today. The announcement from Robbie Parr that he will be retiring tomorrow after he won today on Magic Days. He's 40, he's won the Gold Cup at Cheltenham, the Grand National, the Irish Grand National, and lots of other races. But it's injury that's put an end to his career.
Yeah, but look, Ray, as you say, he's had some career, hasn't he? Like, to win the Grand National back in 2007, Silver Birch, Gordon Elliott's first winner, first Grand National winner. Gordon Elliott hadn't had a winner in Ireland at that point, so that tells you how long ago 2007 was. And then, I suppose, Sizing John was really Robbie's flagship horse, wasn't he? He won the Irish Gold Cup at Leopardstown, then went to Cheltenham, won the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and then came on here and won the Punchestown Gold Cup. And he was saying earlier on that that was one of the best races he ever rode, and was the Punchestown Gold Cup here back in 2017. But yeah, what a career he's had, and the associations he's had with Colin Tizard and Willie Mullins. He rode Shock and Persuade to win his Grade One Novice Chase here, and but mostly with Jessica Harrington. Like, you know, the longevity of their association, their relationship, it's been one of the threads that's run through the National Hunt season for years.
Well, let's hear from him, because a little bit earlier he was speaking to Katie Walsh on RTÉ Racing. Nope, we will go back to that clip a little bit.
Tomorrow, and that'll be it.
Yeah. Will it?
It will, for definite.
Well, yeah. I'll take one more turn here now. I hope I'm talking to you tomorrow, but if I'm not talking to you yet again today or tomorrow, I'd like to say thank you very much on behalf of the jockeys. You're an absolute star. And listen, this was absolutely fantastic. You've ridden Grand National winners, the first man to Sizing John, 3 Gold Cups, 3, you know, the Irish Gold Cup, the English Gold Cup, obviously, and an English National. What was the highlight, pup?
Oh, there's been so many highlights. It's hard to pick one out, but I think even that day here on Sizing John when he won his 3rd Gold Cup, Jack and Armand Conor Gree, it was as good a race as I ever rode in, and I got a huge buzz out of that. You know, that was as good a race I ever rode in, and I've had so many highs. I've had a wonderful career, and hopefully the next 2 days go well.
Ah, they will, of course they will. But you know, we've had such enjoyment watching you as well. I remember you riding your first winner here on a mare bred by your mother Mags. Do you remember that?
Beat a horse of your dad's, Ruby.
That's right.
That was probably one of the best days as well, Katie. The first one you never forget.
Yeah, super. And you had a great show jumping career, and you've been plagued with injury the last couple of months, but you've had a fantastic career. How did you come to a decision? Did yourself and Hannah decide that maybe this was going to be it?
It's been, like, in fairness to Hannah, she always left up to me, and it's been torture the last couple of months though, with the hip pain, and without Enda King in Santry, and Niamh Guy, my physio at home, and Jennifer Pugh, Maria Keely, John Butler. There's been so many people that have helped me on the way to get me through it, and Hannah's been very understanding because I've been very grumpy at times.
Yeah, you've given us some great days, Robert. I know you know, you're a friend of mine, along with being a colleague for a while, and I know your family well. I'm sure Conor Mags will be absolutely bursting with pride, along with Isab as well. And you know, just want to say I hope I'm talking to you again. I hope this isn't it, but
I won't be after training the winner anyway, Katie, I can tell you that.
Well, I'm sure whatever the next step is, it'll be a success anyway.
Cheers,
Robert,
thanks, Katie.
Thanks very much.
Cheers, Katie.
He's been great over the years, and at 40, it feels like he's been around for a long time, which he has, but it still feels like he's quite young to be going.
Yeah, but I suppose that's testament to his ability and the fact that he's been at the top level, Marie, for so long. Look, as he said there, he's been plagued by injury because, like, the last little while, he's been out as often as he's been in, and you're kind of wondering where he is and when he's coming back. There was a meeting there at Limerick that was restricted to riders who'd ridden 20 winners or less in the last season, and Robbie Parr was able to ride in that because he missed so much time out through injury. But look, it's testament to him that he's kept coming back, and we saw the ride he gave Magic Days earlier on today. Like, he's lost none of his ability. He's still as good as ever he was. That front-running ride to get the fractions right on a free-going mare like that, to get it spot on and to win as well as he did, And Neil and Ashdale Bob there in defeat against Classical Dream. He gave him a super ride and just failed to get there. So, look, he's going out at the top. We're going to miss him. We're going to miss him riding, but he's not lost any of his ability, and it's great to see him going out on his own terms.
It was lovely to hear Katie as well, just bringing back up those memories that he had and the good days that he's had here as well. And a lot of people seem to go out here.
You see, it's that type of meeting, isn't it? It's at the end of the season. Like Ruby, obviously, his was the retirement of all retirements back in 2019 when he got off Kenboy and said to Ruby Walsh, said to Willie Mullins, you better get somebody else to ride Live, Love, Laugh in the next race. And Robbie as well now, as well as Shaketi herself, she went out, and Nina Carberry, the two of them went out within 24 hours of each other in 2018, I think it was. They walked the track beforehand, and Nina said they kind of both agreed that if they'd had a winner, that might be it. And Nina won on Josie's orders, I think, one of the Banks races. Katie won on Ante for Willie Mullins, drove him home, got home by a head, and they both retired. So yeah, it's a meeting. It's kind of, you know, the curtain is coming down on Saturday on the National Hunt season, on this National Hunt season. So I suppose if you're thinking of it, it's a good time to go.
Yeah, they could do with getting an old room somewhere here now for putting statues of all the people that have announced their retirement.
Them, yeah.
There is a lot. And it's just, when you hear him talking there about his injuries, Paul Corrie is with us as well, and Paul is one of those unlucky footballers who ended up having to retire very early because of injuries. And I think people that don't play sport at the level that you did, or you know, like Robbie has done as well, probably don't understand that for every injury that you get, you have to come back from it, Paul, as well, which is the difficult part.
Absolutely. I think that was probably the emotional and the mental turmoil almost that you go through as a sports person, particularly when you're not able to compete and you're, you know, in football, you used to be in around team environments when you're somewhat isolated to doing your rehab and your recovery. That's very challenging too. So I think it goes consistently across any sorts of sports division or any sort of sport in general, that when you're not competing and you're being hindered to maybe perform at your maximum, it is something that certainly plays on your mind, and something that I in particular found very, very challenging.
Yeah, because listening to him there and, you know, talking about the Enda King and Santry and his physios and his doctors and, you know, having a back injury and then coming back and fracturing a hip, it's a lot.
It is a lot, Marie. And, you know, for most National Hunt riders as well, they're riding at a weight that's below their natural weight. So that's going along with it as well. And he's saying there, with that, he's a bit grumpy over the last couple of months. But look, that's it. If your body weight wants to be greater than it is, because you have to get down to that level in order to be able to ride at National Hunt weights. And that goes along with it as well. But, you know, Robbie Parr and like any of the top lads and top girls, they're elite sports people. They have to maintain that level of fitness. But yeah, look, as Paul says, you can't compete with injuries when they come.
Yeah, and inevitably they do come at some stage when you're a jump jockey, as we've seen so often. Let's talk about the racing today as well. And the Steers Hurdle Classical Dream was tipped here yesterday by Philip Quinn before he left us. And a super race.
Yeah, brilliant race. Classical Dream, he'd been so good in winning the same race last year. He was really impressive winning it last year. But his last two runs, he was beaten in the Galmoy Hurdle at Goran Park in January. He was beaten in the Stairs Hurdle at Cheltenham, so he did have to bounce back and prove that they were blips as opposed to the start of a trend. And he did it really well. He travelled really well for Paul Town in behind. Rachel Blackmore gave it a really good go from the front, but you could always see Classical Dream. You could pick him out as the one who was travelling best. Look, he was favourite. He's the one to whom you were drawn through the race. But Robbie Parr, he travelled well on Ashdale Bob as well. And when he got after Ashdale Bob, I suppose the worry about Ashdale Bob coming into the race was whether or not he'd have the stamina for 3 miles at this level, at grade one level. And he saw it out really well, but Classical Dream, he just saw it out better. Look, he's a top class staying hurdler on his day when he has things go his way. And I was just watching Paul Town, and he didn't get up on him until the way out, the shootout onto the race course, because he's that type of horse. He's kind of highly strung, but he's very, very talented as well. And that's what, 6 grade one wins for Willie Mullins out of the 7 grade one races so far. So he's mopping up again. But yeah, look, it was a fantastic performance by Classical Dream.
So it's one of those meetings where, you know, you almost forget that there's lots more races to come because it gets so late. So we've another grade one to come after this.
Yeah, no, the 6:35, it's the Barberton Castle Novice Chase. And I suppose Gentleman de May's defection, it does rob the race of a lot of its lustre, or some of it, because Gentleman de May is a really exciting horse. He won the Maggle Chase at Aintree back at the Grand National meeting, but he's out, Willie Mullins' trained horse. But even in his absence, Willie Mullins has a really strong team again. Blue Lord is favourite. He finished third in the Oracle. Paul Tennant has chosen to ride him. He's also got Autumn Colour in there. And San Sam, who ran well on his penultimate run. He was hampered early in the Oracle at Cheltenham. And I think there could be more to come from San Sam. He could outrun his odds. But Gavin Ackle's in there as well, of Gavin Cromwell's. He's a very good horse. The bulk of his form is over 2.5 miles, but they dropped him back to 2 miles last time for the Oracle at Cheltenham. They had to supplement him for the race, actually. They had to pay 8,000 to put him in the race. But he ran really well. He travelled through his race well. He finished second behind Edwardston. And I suppose he proved that day that he could travel at 2 mile pace at grade one level. So he's a really exciting horse, and he's kind of I suppose challenging Blue Lord for favouritism.
Okay, well, Dom, we'll let you go and watch the race, and sure, we'll have you back afterwards. You can fill us in on what happened. We're going to take a very quick break now, and then we're back talking Liverpool, Jurgen Klopp, Champions League, Manchester United and Chelsea, and all the rest of the football news.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. We are live in Punchestown, and I'm delighted to say that Paul Corrie is with me here in our Roadcaster. And it's time to turn our attention now to football. And Paul, the news that all Liverpool fans wanted has been confirmed this evening. Jurgen Klopp is staying on.
Yeah, we're going to be speaking about Liverpool being in the latter stages of more European competitions and Premier Leagues going forward, it seems. But that's massive news, and it's probably really important timing for Liverpool when you think about the end of the season that they have. The FA Cup final looks like a Champions League final now, and the run in the Premier League. So huge news for them. You would look at what has gone on, particularly Manchester United, look at Arsenal when they've lost the likes of Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger. Jurgen Klopp is without doubt the most important piece of that jigsaw at Liverpool Football Club. He's got the respect of the players. The players seem to love playing for him, and he certainly seems to have the respect of the board and Fenway Sports Group. So it's huge for them. It's an extra 2 years. And when you think back and you know, people involved with the game now say that managers don't last 10 plus years. This will be 11 years when Jurgen Klopp wraps up at Liverpool, if he is to leave at the end of his contract now. And it's an incredible story of where they were previously, the players he's brought in. He's obviously won a Premier League and a Champions League, and there's those three competitions still left to play for come the end of the season. So it's massive news, and it'll be one that will boost everybody involved with the club, and it'll give them probably a little bit extra if there is any more extra to get from the club at the moment heading into this running.
Yeah, well, let's hear his announcement, because interestingly in it, you mentioned that, you know, he's nearly 11 years at the club, and he actually refers to that himself, and it's like he's almost surprised that he's lasted that long. It's a lovely announcement. I think I understand why so many people like him, just listening to the warmth, and he seems really genuine in it. Let's hear it.
There's something to announce. Like last time, some will like it, some will not like it too much, but will not like it, stop watching now. I stay for another 2 years. And not only me. No, all my coaches as well, which is the most important, actually. Why is not a question? Because Ola wants to stay. And as a good husband, what are you doing when your wife wants to stay? You stay. That's not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons. You know, I love our club, and it's the best place to be. I feel really, really lucky. Well, it's now 6.5 years ago, FSG thought, would be a good idea to bring this German fella in, and here we are, and we'll stay for another 2. Makes it 4 from now on. Wow, that's a long time in football. Hope we all will enjoy the time together. See you soon.
He's such a box office character, isn't he? Even the way he delivers. Okay, there's probably a PR team now of about 50 people scripting that and putting it together and loads of takes, but you know, I'm totally buying it, Paul.
It comes across very natural, and he speaks as if you know, he's speaking to any Tom, Dick or Harry in any sense or form. But I'd say there's a lot of Liverpool fans there who owe Jurgen Klopp's wife, it seems, a drink at some point down the line, because it seems that she was very instrumental in that decision. But yeah, no, he's a very likable person. He seems like you know, somebody who's very probably easy to get along with as a player. I'm sure his demands are huge, but I'm sure when you put the work in for him, he rewards you well. So you can't speak highly enough of the work that he's done there. You think of where they were when he took over. Yes, they ran close with Brendan Rodgers, but the team that he's built, you saw it last night in the performance, the application across the team was incredible, and then the strength and depth that he's managed to build in that squad. So it's a group effort. You listen to him there allude to the fact that his backroom staff is going to stay on. That's very important, that they're going to have the same sort of contingent working with the team, and I'm sure the team above the playing staff will also remain the same. So it bodes well for Liverpool Football Club.
It really does, and I think even just as a personality, he seems to have the right balance of ruthlessness and warmth, and he's able to bring the players in and get them to play for him in the way that he wants to. But at the same time, you know there's a line there that you can't cross.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you look at the Liverpool team, or if you look at the Man City team, and Guardiola and Klopp in charge of both, you wouldn't sit there and say there's, you know, a superstar like a Messi or Ronaldo. It seems to be based, and it seems to be ingrained, that the players work hard for each other, and that is demands that are obviously coming from Klopp and from Guardiola respectively. And that seems to be the difference between those two, when you compare them maybe to other managers. If you think of the likes of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, a really nice guy, but probably didn't have the same sort of authority that those top managers have. And you wouldn't look at, and you never seem to hear bad stories about Liverpool players or bad eggs or people maybe banging the door down to leave the club. Of course, there is that question mark about Salah and whether or not he's still going to be there. But you can bet your bottom dollar that Salah, Mane, you know, Thiago, Van Dijk, they all respect Jurgen Klopp. And that is so important when you're thinking about having sustained success. There has to be somebody at the top of the hierarchy who just has complete respect of the players. And, you know, you're seeing that in performances. They just seem unrelenting at this moment in time. It's just win after win after win. And the way they play, Marie, they play with so much energy, but they never seem to be tired. You know, I know they've got a good squad and they've got great strength and depth, but they're still relying on those key players to play week in, week out. And, when things are going well, maybe not enough credit goes towards Jurgen Klopp, but he's absolutely been the cornerstone of what has been created there.
Yeah, you get the sense that they're like a proper team, you know, that it's not a group of individuals trying to do their own thing, that they are all doing it together and in it for whatever the bigger picture is, whether it is to go out and win those Premier League titles or the Champions League. And, they do have that depth, but he picks the right teams, though, in the right moments for the right games as well, and gets the best out of them all.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think probably back, if you just look at the Champions League run, I think when they went away to Inter Milan, he probably played a bit of an understrength team and maybe swapped in some of the other, maybe, you know, players who were typically on the bench. And he did the same with the second leg against Benfica. So he shuffled the pack really well. He's kept the players fresh, and he's kept, you know, the players who typically don't play hungry as well and ready to come in. And that's been something that he's been very successful in doing. And, I mean, the performances speak for themselves. You know, when he puts an 11 out on any given day, you saw them against Villarreal last night. They just suffocated the life out of Villarreal. And that comes down to the setup, the application, the respect. Everything comes from the manager, in my opinion anyway. And the way they're going at this moment in time, the only thing that's going to stop them from a Premier League is if Man City go on and win every game that is left in the Premier League. I think they'll beat Chelsea in the FA Cup final, and it looks like it's going to be an all-English Champions League final, so it's there for them to do. It really is there for them to do. And if they win all four, I mean, they have to go down as the best British side ever.
Yeah, they were pretty phenomenal, and last night it was just a case of, it felt like anyway, just, you know, sticking to the process. Even though Villarreal had that defensive block up, you just felt they were going to get that goal at some stage if they just kept doing what they were doing.
It was as straightforward as many people would have probably predicted before the game. Villarreal have really struggled in La Liga all season. Yes, their defensive record was good, but I mean, to be sitting seventh in La Liga, going up against a team like Liverpool, you probably didn't give them much of a chance. And you're right, Marie, when a team sits in and they sit deep and they give that low block, it can be frustrating. But I thought Liverpool moved the ball really well last night, and it was only a matter of time before the goals went in. I thought Thiago was absolutely sensational. His range of passing and his ability to actually play through the lines, it's just incredible. And I would love to see his success rate. I think it was in the high 90s. And, you know, they're not backwards and sideways pass. They're really incisive. He gets the likes of Diaz, Mane and Salah on the ball in really dangerous areas. And it was only a matter of time last night. Yes, the first goal was a bit lucky with Henderson's deflected cross, but once they got the first, you know, you could see that the foot was down in the accelerator. The second goal was pure class, lovely slip ball from Salah into Mane, and a really neat finish. And you have to say it's tie over. It really is. There's no chance that Liverpool go to Villarreal and either lose the game 2-0 or 3-0 and go out. It just won't happen. The form they're in at the moment, the individual performances, the team performance, they've goals from everywhere. Like, they can hurt you in so many different ways. That probably separates them a bit from Man City, if you ask me. You know, the likes of from scoring from wide areas, being incisive and going through the middle, set pieces, they just seem to hurt teams a number of different ways. And the balance they have in the squad now, I think the Thiago Fabinho really sets them up nicely, and the front three have always been rock solid, as have the two centre halves, particularly Konate going in again beside Van Dijk. It's hard to look at Liverpool when they play a game now and just not fancy them to win it.
And crucially as well, if you're a Liverpool fan, even though you know they're going to head to Villarreal and they probably will shuffle the pack a little bit, but anybody that comes in to, whether it's Matip or whoever comes into the front three or the midfield, you know that they want to try and get that starting spot as well. So whoever comes on is going to be out there trying to make an impact.
Of course, and there's massive games to come, both in the Premier League, they've obviously got the FA Cup final and potentially a Champions League final. So anybody who is to play on any given day, whether it's you know, a second string 11 that goes out, they're going to be competing to be available and to be in that starting 11 for those big games that are to come. There's probably a sense that probably 90% of the team picks itself at this moment in time. You could maybe flip between Konate and Matip. I think Henderson, Fabinho and Thiago will start all the big games, and then maybe you're looking at Diaz being the one that potentially could come out. Salah and Mane will always play, but Diaz in the form that he is in is almost you know, a given as well. So there are great options off the bench.
Look at the backup to that front three.
It's incredible. Like, Bobby Firmino wasn't even available. You talk about the likes of Diego Jota who can come on, Divock Origi, Oxlade-Chamberlain's never even spoken about anymore. Yeah. Minamino, like, it just goes on and on. And, you know, none of these players are really picking up major injuries, which is incredible because they've just such a vast array of players to choose from. So it could bode well. The fixture's going to come thick and fast over the next couple of weeks, and they cannot afford to drop points in the Premier League, so he's certainly going to need to use them all.
Let's move on to West Ham and Frankfurt playing tonight at Eintracht Frankfurt. Isn't it amazing that it's West Ham's first European semi-final in 46 years and they're playing the same side again?
Yeah, I wasn't even aware of that, but that is incredible. That absolutely is. And it's not going to be, I would say the majority of people would look at this and say it should be straightforward enough for West Ham, given Frankfurt aren't exactly firing all cylinders in the German league, but they did knock Barcelona out in the last leg. In the last round, and this could be a difficult tie for West Ham. What you would say is, looking at it, West Ham rested the majority of their main players against Chelsea on the weekend, so there's full focus on this competition, and if they were to go on and win it, it actually qualifies them for the Champions League. So there's a lot to play for here for West Ham. One, yes, to win the competition, but also qualify for the Champions League. And, you know, we talk about Liverpool and the strength and depth. West Ham are, you know, have gone through the whole season with probably the 13, 14 players. That's not probably something that's foreign to David Moyes. He tends to stick with the same 11, and he's got the likes of Yarmolenko who can bring off the bench or one or two more, and he sticks to those same players. So it's worked really well for them to date. They were excellent in the last round against Lyon. Can they bring it in? I think it's going to be another challenge. But if they were to perform like they have done in the Premier League, you certainly fancy them to go through.
Yeah, they've been so impressive, and David Moyes deserves a huge amount of credit. Even it was just interesting here, we were talking about Alex Ferguson and the Moyes, and it feels like it was ages ago, but it actually wasn't that long ago when David Moyes had that job. So much has happened at Manchester United since then, but so much has happened for him too, and to be at that level again and to be talking about him in such a positive way is just testament to the manager that he is and just how difficult he had it at Manchester United.
Yeah, I mean, the timing certainly wasn't right for Moyes. It was always going to be difficult after Alex Ferguson, and the journey that he's taken to actually come to this point is probably, you know, he's had to kind of go around the houses. You think he went out to Real Sociedad and maybe a bit off the radar for a number of English fans, but he's come back in to West Ham, and the job that he's done is probably very similar to the one that he did at Everton. You know, you think of the style of football being reliant on that kind of same core group of players, and you can kind of see elements, even if you think of Suchek as very kind of similar mold to a Fellaini. You've got a Cresswell kind of similar to a Leighton Baines. He has a system that he likes to play, and when it's operated and when it's deployed well, it wins games of football. You know, the fact that they've gone so deep in the Premier League, and they've run the likes of a Manchester United and a Tottenham for that top six spot is a testament to them, given the fact that they've had to also balance the Europa League on top of that. So, listen, David Moyes, when he does decide to finish up in football, will have a serious CV and serious recognition from people who are involved in the game.
Manchester United and Chelsea tonight, a game that would, in generally anyway, be captivating the imagination. But it feels like, for Manchester United fans anyway, it's the end of the season can't come soon enough.
Yeah, it's damn soon. I nearly forgot the game was on, Marie. I think it was with the Champions League that was going on and the Europa League that's on tonight. People, and certainly I did, nearly forgot that it was going on, and even being a Chelsea fan is slightly worrying. But looking at Chelsea on the weekend, it's somewhat looked as if the flip-flops were on and they were nearly on the beach. It was a really poor game against West Ham, and the form that Manchester United are in of late, you would certainly start to worry about them. You know, the 4-0 defeat against Liverpool, the 3-1 defeat against Arsenal, there's a number of players there who seem to have thrown the toys out of the pram. They don't seem to be playing for Ragnik, and it's kind of a bit of a lottery what Manchester United team shows up tonight. It could be one of two. I think it's going to either be a damn squid or it's going to be completely open and it'll be like a basketball game, maybe end to end. You would have to fancy Chelsea just purely on the fact that Manchester United have been so poor of late, and Chelsea, when they've gotten a ride over the last number of weeks, you even think back to that Real Madrid game, they were very impressive. So it could be a bit of a lottery, it could be a good game to watch, or it could be one of those where you sit back and think, God, 90 minutes, I'd rather forget.
It's interesting just following Ranić now and I guess wondering what he's going to do next, because his future is far from clear. But it feels like the situation at Manchester United now that Ten Hag has been appointed is all about Ranić and what he's doing and his role, and just he's, I guess, trying to secure a job for himself as well, because he's very much putting himself at the centre of everything that's going on there.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were to measure him on his performance as manager, you would have to strongly question what sort of role is actually there. Certainly his CV previously would make you raise major question marks as why he was actually gone in there as a manager in the first place. But maybe he's got a good understanding, maybe he's been able to hoover up all the information from a playing and non-playing side of the club, that he's actually maybe able to go into consultancy role and start to dictate maybe some of the more strategic objectives of the club. And maybe within somebody like Ten Hag, he might be able to feel that he can maybe dovetail some of his ideas maybe in the form of recruitment or playing style, and maybe work with him in some way, shape or form. But I don't really understand that. I never understood it when he got the job, and even today, 6 months or 9 months or however long it is he's in the job, it's hard to see what he's done actually with the playing squad, what he's developed within the players, what he's developed within the playing style. It just leaves question marks as to where he goes from here. Yes, I would imagine they'll give him a consultancy role. Will it be longer term? I don't think so. And is he going to have much say in the direction of the club? It's hard to say. You would imagine Ten Hag is going to have far more of.
And I think even when you listen to Klopp there talking about how important it is for him to have his coaches around, like, people who end up becoming super great managers are the ones who surround themselves with the people that they want there, whereas it just feels like Ranić wants himself there and it's unclear whether or not anybody else wants him there.
Yeah, I'd love a consultancy role at Manchester United. I say the salary's unbelievable. Yeah, you can.
And then especially now when there's new manager coming in, because no matter what goes wrong, like, the buck stops with the manager, so you're not even going to be getting the blame if the team aren't winning matches. It'll be Ten Hag that will have to deal with all the slack.
Ragnar will be up there with the slippers looking down at Ten Hag and the flag and saying,
strategizing.
that's what I had to deal with last year.
Going a few holidays and find a few players. I think I could do that as well. Let's very quickly move on to the League of Ireland, because it is a very busy night of it tomorrow night. Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers is on the TV, but I think it's St. Patrick's Athletic in Derry really that will probably be attracting the most attention, Paul.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Derry need to win this game. You know, Shamrock Rovers seem to be a bit ominous with the majority of the games they're playing there. They seem to have clicked into gear. The likes of Danny Mandreo and Jack Burns seems to have finally kind of struck up that bit of relationship, and there's chances being created and goals scored. So it's one then when you look at Derry and their next coming fixtures that they need to keep winning games. They were very impressive last week when they went up against UCD. They're always going to score goals. The way Roy Higgins was as a player is that he liked to play an expansive game, and you can see that littered throughout his side. They're really good going forward. They're probably need to shut up shop it maybe a little bit better at the back, but if they can produce anything like they produced against UCD, or even down through some of the other wins like Finn Harps, if they can produce a performance like that, you would fancy them against St. Pat's. St. Pat's have kind of been a bit up and down. Some of the performances that you see them, they've been really impressive, and then others they've kind of struggled to get over the line against teams that you would expect them to beat. Think back to the Drogheda game at home in Richmond Park. They drew 1-1. They're the type of games, if you're Tim Clancy, that you need to be winning if you want to be challenging for those European spots. But it's certainly one that will draw the eye to. Derry have been mildly impressive. If they can go from away from home and beat St. Pat's, it'll probably give them that little bit of a kick that they need, because some of the results in the last number of weeks have maybe let Shamrock Rovers back in the door. And if Shamrock Rovers are to go ahead of them, you do kind of think, okay, they might kind of take away from here.
I think being up and down is nearly the story of the season. We'll say Shamrock Rovers aside, I don't think they've been hugely impressive, but they've been able to grind out wins, that's for sure. But when you look at the rest of the teams, they just don't, you're going into a fixture and anything can happen at the end of it. You know, you're looking at Bowes and the likes of Shelburne as well. You know, they could have terrible results and then they'll follow them up with absolutely unbelievable ones. So there's just no consistency really from anybody.
No,
which is great if you're a football fan, by the way.
Absolutely, and Shelburne's probably the prime example. Going up to Derry on Friday night and they win 2-1, and then they come back down against Bowes and they get beaten 4-1 or whatever it was. And that probably goes for themselves, it goes for Bowes, it goes for Dundalk, and it goes for Sligo. You know, some really good wins and just not being able to back it up, consistency. And what that has meant is that the top two sides now have just pulled away from the chasing pack. You know, Rovers sit 6 points ahead of St. Pat's. If they were in tomorrow, potentially go ahead 9 ahead, and Derry would go 10 ahead. So you can kind of start looking at the league table and saying that it's a bit of a two-horse race. And for the others who are maybe in that chasing pack, it's that race for the European spots. But even the likes of Dundalk, like Stevie O'Donnell's done a decent job in there, but they don't seem to be winning games. I think of the 12 that they've played, they've only won 3, which is really surprising. And then when you look at Sligo as well, who got off to a great start, they just can't seem to win games at this moment in time. And you are right in saying that, Marie, that middle pack from Finn Harps to St. Pat's, it's a complete lottery about who's going to come out on Friday night.
Okay, those games are on tomorrow evening with Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers live on RTE television. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're going to continue our build up to the Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano fight.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. Paul Corry is with me in studio and we are live at Punchestown, but we are turning our attention to boxing now. And we have finally reached the moment that I have been waiting for months. We are crossing over live to Gavin Casey in New York City for the Katie Taylor Amanda Serrano preview. Gavin, how are you?
Time for this one myself. About 5 years, really. It's taken that long to get it over the line, but here we are. And there's real buzz about the place here. Anybody I'm speaking to from Ireland or of Irish heritage is either heading to the fight or making plans to watch it. It's exciting time.
And there's plenty of us coming over tomorrow as well, Gav.
You're coming over yourself, is it?
I'm coming over tomorrow and I absolutely cannot wait. I think it's going to be brilliant. But there is a huge amount of conversation and focus on whether or not she's going to be able to get the job done. And every person we're talking to seems to have a different opinion. You've been following her for such a long time now. You've been watching her up close and personal over the last couple of days. Give us your thoughts.
You know what? My mind has probably fluctuated a few times even this week since touching down. I came over with the preconception that Amanda Serrano is probably fighting Katie Taylor at the right time to pull off what would have been a massive upset a couple of years ago, but now would actually be the expected result, in that Serrano has suddenly become the bookie's favourite. And I think a lot of people are looking at Taylor's last couple of performances, looking at the fact that she's 35 years of age, and there's a suspicion there that she is just in a very natural athletic decline, as happens to athletes backstage of their careers. But I have to say, I just spent 20 minutes in Katie's company with a few other Irish journalists, and she's probably after changing my mind again, to be honest. She's just a picture of calmness. And I think maybe in the build-up and all of the media attention that she is being subjected to, she can kind of handle that. I mean, she's pretty used to it at this point. It's very new for Serrano. It's very big. So if I was to be asked which one of them is feeling the pressure more, I would say at the moment, Amanda Serrano. And who knows how that could contribute to what happens on Saturday night.
I was reading a piece that you wrote earlier, Gavin. I was really surprised to even hear you say that, because I've watched Serrano over the last few days doing interviews and she does seem to be able to handle it all right. But then when I was reading your piece and the detail you'd have had in it, that she doesn't even have a phone. So, like, it's just not something that, it's just not how she operates, that she's engaging all the time with the media or even people, it seems.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Marie. Like, she actually handles herself quite well in interviews. It's not that she doesn't come across articulately or anything. It's more so that I think she's naturally a pretty shy person, actually. And a lot of the talk around this fight from her over the years about knocking Katie out and about dethroning her and so on has actually been done by her manager, Jordan Maldonado, from behind her Twitter account. So I think it's just a new kind of a spotlight for her to be dealing with. And bear in mind as well, Amanda Serrano, Puerto Rican born, but was raised and lives in Brooklyn. And there's a lot of sort of hometown pressure on her as well. She's going to feel like the away fighter in her own hometown, but there's still massive support for her here. And I think an expectation that she performs, and an expectation on behalf of a lot of New Yorkers and certainly Brooklynites, that she topples Katie Taylor. So yeah, there's a lot going on for both of them, to be fair. And I might even be reading too much into it, but I guess you're looking for variables at this point to try and figure out which way this might go and what sort of tiny margins may decide it. And I think Serrano just has a tougher fight week than Katie Taylor does.
The question that always follows the inevitable one about who's going to win is, if Katie wins, is that going to be it? Do you think that we will see the last of her if she does end up on top? I've read that Eddie Hearn is pondering maybe some future fights, a trilogy, a fight in Ireland. Do you think they're realistic options?
I would be absolutely stunned. In fact, it simply won't happen that Katie would retire, win, lose, or draw after the fight. I mean, if she wins it, I think she will eye potentially bigger fights or equally sized fights. There is that prospect of Ireland that has just about opened up. The door is a little bit ajar again for the first time in a long time. And that impossibility of a Katie Taylor homecoming due to the climate, gangland feuds, and that inextricable link with boxing has now turned into a bit of a pipe dream again. And that would certainly tempt her to stay on, if nothing else. Do I think it's a realistic prospect? Dublin? Probably too soon to say. I think it could, the picture could change a lot even in the next couple of months. The only thing I would say is that headlining Madison Square Garden against the seven-time world champion is going to be very, very tough to top. And probably the only way to do it is to actually come home and have a night like we're about to experience on Saturday night in Dublin or somewhere in Ireland.
Yeah, and we've seen what can be done when there's the right marketing behind it. We saw the Barcelona women put 91,000 in into the Nou Camp there recently enough. So a bit of marketing and a lot of interest that you would have at home. And I can only imagine what could be done. But let's just talk about the fight and what you're actually expecting from it, because we've seen Katie involved in so many different types since she's turned professional. What's going to suit her best?
I think there's an onus on her to take the sting out of Serrano early in this fight, and that's going to be very difficult to do, because in order to tire Serrano, let's say, she has to actually engage with her. Serrano is an extremely dangerous southpaw puncher, so you're sort of dicing with danger even engaging with her at all. The thing is, if Katie gets on her bike for 10 rounds, yes, she might just about be able to box her way to victory, but Serrano will still have that relentless engine, and at some point you would fancy that they're going to meet in the middle, and Serrano might even get the better of those exchanges. So the actual game plan from Ross Enemoy and Taylor herself are going to be absolutely crucial to my mind. And to be totally honest with you, Marie, I don't know what their game plan is. They weren't going to give it away today, naturally. And it's one of those fights where I've run it through in my head probably 100 times and I see it going slightly differently every time. I think she just has to be careful and stating the obvious, but when you're fighting a fighter or a boxer who punches as hard as Amanda Serrano does, it's probably safety first, and then use your footwork, which is absolutely pivotal to Katie's own attack. She has mentioned in the build-up to this fight that she had a calf injury for her last two, which might be a little bit of a caveat in what were two sloppier performances. And if her legs are back to full health, maybe she can just about get the job done on her feet, using that hand speed that we know she still has.
Where is she vulnerable?
Katie or Amanda?
Katie.
I'd say her defence is probably not what it was. She was never overly reliant on her defence anyway, in the sense that her attack is actually so good and her punch output has traditionally been so strong that she probably hasn't had to focus on defence a great deal. But certainly in the last couple of fights we see her, when she initiates an exchange with an opponent. She kind of blushes in, her chin is in the air a little bit. She's susceptible to being hit. I also think a wrinkle in this fight is we don't really know how physically strong Amanda Serrano is going to be at heavyweight. She's coming up from probably her optimal weight of featherweight. Now, she's won world titles in 7 divisions. She's well able to fluctuate, but I just wonder when they actually tie up and they're in the clinch, who's going to be more drained from those sorts of encounters? And probably in the last couple of fights against fighters who were supposedly naturally smaller, in Feruza Sharapova and Jennifer Han, both of whom came up from feather and super feather, Taylor's probably come out second best in some of those clinches. And maybe, again, that's just that little bit of wear and tear or age that comes with a really long, 2-decade-long boxing career. So I'm really fascinated to see who actually is the physically stronger in there. I think that could determine a lot, because if Serrano is stronger and she can wear Taylor down, then I think we're in for a long night.
Yeah, I think it's going to be absolutely fascinating. What about crowd-wise? Earlier in the week, Eddie Hearn said there was about 14,000 tickets sold. He reckoned he was going to shift a few more. What's it looking like now?
Yeah, we were just speaking to some Matchroom officials, actually, at the press conference, and they're saying it's tracking towards a sellout. Now, I've seen on the website that there's plenty of tickets available, so I'm actually not entirely sure. They won't give us an exact figure. We'll obviously know at some point during the night on Saturday night. What I do know is that of, let's say, 14 or 15,000 tickets that have been sold already, 61% of them, I believe, were from the States, and then another 39% or so were from actually outside of the USA. And I think of that number then, 70% or something have come from Ireland. So long story short, while they didn't give us numbers, I think that worked out at about maybe 4,000, 4,500 people coming over from Ireland to attend this fight, which is just amazing, really. We joked with Katie just after the press conference that she's become the new Ricky Hatton with a travelling army. And she just said that she hopes she doesn't put on as much weight as he does between fights.
Oh, fantastic, Gav. Thanks a million for joining us. Sure, I might catch up with you over the next few days. If not, enjoy it, and we will talk to you next week. Now, we have been graced by the presence of Ruby Walsh. He asked us down here, he said, come on down to Punches Down for a few days, hang around with my crew, and then he didn't talk to us for 2 days. But you're here now, Ruby.
Maria, I'm afraid I'm just too busy to talk to you. You know, it's seen as you're heading off, of course, to New York to go and watch Katie Taylor fight. How confident are you Katie Taylor will win?
I'm pretty confident now after listening to Gavin there, because he kind of laid it out in very understandable terms as to why he thinks that she will win. And I'm just going to go with him. He said that he thought potentially she could be on the athletic decline, but he went to watch her in the warm-up yesterday and he listened to her in the press conference. He says she's looking great, she's so calm, she's so composed, she just seems to be in complete control of all of her emotions, and he feels that she's going to get the job done. So I'm going to go with that.
Well, the only person who's offered me an opinion on it is Hugh Carl, and he spoke about it today. Now, I've no idea how much or how little Hugh Carl knows about boxing, but he wasn't overly confident. He believed that she just didn't have the punch that's going to be required to win this.
Yeah, well, there is that school of thought as well, especially because she is getting that little bit older and she will have those miles in the legs as well, and it is quite long and Serrano is kind of coming up. But I mean, I'm not a boxing expert either, so I'll just take the words of Gavin and Hugh and just hope that I get a good fight and Katie wins and have a great time in New York. I don't really care very much after that. So Ruby, what's been happening? You've been waving at you there in the parade ring from your television setup, and you've been point blank ignoring me as you've been surrounded by your racing friends. Are you having a good time?
That's what you do when you're working, Marie. You know, you have to concentrate. That's
Jane Mangan has come over twice to talk to me. She brought me out for a cup of tea and paid for it. And she's working too.
Why didn't she bring you into the canteen over there where you don't have to pay for it?
She absolutely did bring me in there, but they charge on day 3, they told us. Well, you probably don't get charged for anything. It's very different.
Should have come with me, Marie.
Yeah, well, you didn't invite me. Anyway,
Rob, jeans. I couldn't bring you.
Well, that's true, actually. You did point out that I wasn't dressed appropriately for racing.
I was only staring. Of course you are. No, of course you are dressed appropriately for racing. There is no dress code in Punchestown, unlike Sandown Park.
All right, didn't know that either. Anyway, let's talk about Robbie Power.
Yeah, look, 40, Verizon 41, the end was probably always coming close. But look, great for him to ride a winner this afternoon and announce his retirement. He's going to finish up tomorrow evening after he rides Tihupu in the Paddy Power Champion Hurdle. He's just on RTE2 at the minute. We can see him here behind us. But look, great to ride a winner here. Nice way to go out. And he just basically blamed injury. And to be honest with you, the older you get, the slower it becomes. the slower it gets to recover from injuries, the less you bounce, the harder it is. And I can see exactly why he's doing it. And you know, I just hope he finds retirement as enjoyable as I have.
That's very nice, because you spend an awful lot of time with us here on the show, so that must mean you enjoy our company. He's had such a long career, though. I was listening to Katie interview him there a little bit earlier, and she was recalling his first winner here, and he said he really enjoyed it because it was his first, and also because he beat you.
He's a better memory than me. But yeah, look, he had a good career as a young person, show jumping. He tried that. He worked with Peter Charles in the UK. He came back here then to try his hand at being a jockey. Started with Paddy Mullins, moved on to Jessica Harrington, had a great relationship with her all through his career. He now rides a good few for Rob Corr, and he had a spell with Colin Tizzard as well. But look, he's had a wonderful career. He's won Grand Nationals, Gold Cups. He's had huge success at the highest level, and you know, the end comes for everyone, and at least he's getting to call it quits on his own terms. Or yeah, he might. He said, let's get through tomorrow.
That's true. And I said that they need to maybe put a room here somewhere and put statues of all the people who have retired in this very place.
Yeah, usually don't they put up a statue of you, it means you're sort of 6 foot under, so
another while yet.
We'll keep away from the statues.
So we had Don McLean on a little bit earlier on, and he made the point that Willie Mullins is mopping up, and he has mopped up again there with Blue Lord winning in the Barberstown Castle Novice Chase.
Yeah, just about hung on to beat Course Sublime. Rachel Blackmore got a great run out of Course Sublime, and like going to the last, you'd think Blue Lord was going to win easy, but Course Sublime made Blue Lord run all the way to the line, and that was a grade one double on the afternoon for Willie Mullins and Paul Townend after Classical Dream had won the Ladbrokes Champion Stairs Hurdle. So they're having a super meeting. They had a couple of winners each on Tuesday. Willie had four yesterday, Paul had three, and they've had a double again today. But in the top races, Marie, they're winning all the big ones.
And obviously I'm not a racing expert, but I do like watching it when you're here, Ruby, or when you're on the telly. And I've been watching Paul over the last few days, and I always found him to be such a serious character, but as the days are going by and he's getting more winners, I'm seeing him smiling an awful lot more in those post-race interviews.
Yeah, that's, I suppose, confidence, less pressure. Even to watch him riding Royal Rendezvous yesterday, which wasn't one of the graded races, but after riding the Cup 4 winners, a couple of big ones, the confidence he had in Royal Rendezvous, the decisions he made, the way he reacted to what was happening in front of him, he made all the right decisions. And even in these two rides today, I mean, to have the confidence to allow Mark Walsh to get out and go on Sire de Burley because he didn't want to get involved, and then an hour later to do the exact opposite on Blue Lord, make sure Keith Donoghue didn't get out. He's just making all the right decisions. His reactions are spot on. And look, he's riding all season. His strike rate this year, Marie, is just on the upside of 36%. That is phenomenal for a jockey. To be winning on over 1 in 3 is incredible riding.
Yeah, it really is. Don, hop in here as well into our Roadcaster microphone. Another really busy day to come tomorrow. What should we look forward to?
Honeysuckle.
Simple as that.
Ah, yeah, look, Marie, it's brilliant that she's here. It's a pity that the match didn't materialise, that the Nicky Henderson horse didn't come over to take her on, but look, she's here. She's won 15 out of 15, 16 if you include her point-to-point as well. And all 15 of those races, she was ridden to victory by Rachel Blackmore. So she's back on board tomorrow again. And yeah, look, she's a long odds on shot. She's not a betting proposition, but it's brilliant that she's going to be here. She's box office.
Yeah, she really is, Ruby.
That's exactly what she is, Marie. It's just incredible. And she's, look, Henry de Bromhill gets a little forgotten in the whole thing, but what he's done with her is phenomenal. I mean, this is her fourth season. She's had four runs each year. She's going for the perfect 16 tomorrow. That's not just that simple, to keep a racehorse and a mare as well, to keep her going in that frame of mind for that length of time. And hopefully we're going to get to see her again next year.
I was actually getting a little bit annoyed earlier because you wouldn't talk to me, and then I realised that your Alex Ferguson was here yesterday, so you were probably hanging out with him.
I had a good chat with Sir Alex, yeah. Sir Alex yesterday, he was in great form. Had a bit of lunch with him as well, yeah, it was super, you know.
Go on.
Go on, what?
What did he say? What did he say about Ten Hag, Man United? I want to know it all.
No, do you see, he comes racing to get away from football, so, you know, those people tend to talk to you if you don't annoy them about the things they don't want to talk about. So that's what we spoke about horses, that he was here yesterday to enjoy a day at the races. You know, that's how you stay friends with people.
Know that you haven't gone full media yet, Ruby, because you haven't been playing him about all the stuff that the regular people want to know, like Manchester United. Well, Paul Carey is still here, and Paul has some team news for the Manchester United-Chelsea game for us.
Yeah, one change for Manchester United from weekend's fixture against Arsenal, and that's Sancho comes out and Rashford comes in. And you look at the 11 on paper, and
it's pretty weak, to be honest with you, Marie. It's De Gea, Dalot, Lindelof, Varane, Telles, Matic, McTominay, Alanga, Fernandez, Rashford and Ronaldo. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't bode very well. They don't really have many options on the bench, though. You do have to say that. They seem to be out a number of players. Harry Maguire's dropped off the bench as well there, so you would ask a number of questions of what's going on in Manchester United at the moment. And the way Chelsea line up, if they are to play to their full complement, you would certainly fancy them at Old Trafford. They line up with Mendy, they've got Azpilicueta, Rudiger and Thiago Silva. They have Reece James right wing back, Alonso left wing back, Kante, Jorginho, and then the front three of Mount, Havertz and Werner. And those front three have been good in the last number of weeks, Marie. Particularly, you think back to that Real Madrid game. They opened up Real Madrid a number of times. They were good on the weekend as well. They seem to have a bit more movement when they play with Havertz and Werner as opposed to maybe Lukaku up top. And if they are to move that Manchester United back four around, there's certainly chances to be made.
They won't have to work hard to move Manchester United back four around. Now, mind you, Maguire's not there, so they might have to work a little harder, but they won't be that difficult.
Ruby, we were making the point a little bit earlier that it feels like Manchester United fans just can't wait for the season to end.
I don't know what Manchester United fans can wait for. The season to end, but what's next season going to bring? New manager, but it's going to be the same players, unless it's a complete change of attitude. I don't know, Marie.
You probably missed the news as well because you're on the telly that Jurgen Klopp has signed on for another 2 years, who is going to be with Liverpool until 2026.
I could have guessed that. Now, I didn't need to hear that. Like, what was he going to walk away from the job he's doing? But the other side of it is, like, if you were a manager, would you really want the Manchester United job right now?
No.
No. It's like catching a live grenade. I mean, what would you want it for?
But when Jurgen Klopp was taking over the Liverpool job, was it a job that everybody wanted, Paul?
Well, I guess Brendan Rodgers ran that Liverpool team quite well and finished second in the Premier League, and only the last couple of weeks they ended up throwing it away. Did they have the same sort of core that Manchester United? There's just no core to the Manchester United team. And I think Ruby's right in saying that it is a bit of a grenade that they're passing across. And if whoever, and obviously Ten Hag isn't heard in that squad, but I don't know where you begin to chop it up and who you keep and what you build it around.
Yeah, to me, you'd want to have let it fall a bit further before you'd be taken. It's just not quite. To me, it hasn't reached rock bottom yet, so don't get in till it gets to the bottom.
Right, well, you can have that conversation another time because I'm signing off now and heading off to New York City, lads.
Mind the queues in the airport, Marie. Been awful pity if you missed the flight.
Enjoy the next couple of days, Ruby. Thank you for having us down. I did have a good time with Jane Mangan. She was great company and she brought me all around, told me about all the racing, and I'll definitely come back and join her soon. Paul, thank you for coming down.
That's right.
Don, thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Marie.
Tara Kumar is up next.
RTE 2FM. On 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.